You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
The Paranormal News Insider from ParanewsInsider.com. Produced by WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of February 6th, 2018. And this is episode number 349. Wow, I didn't see that coming. It's creeping up on me. And this is your host, as always, Brian Dixons. And what a crazy week it's been. All over the place. Some weird news, weird stuff happening to me. Everyone's sick. What's going on? Colin Schneider down for the count right now. Mr. Invincible himself was out last night here on the network. And it's, my gosh, I'm just going to lock myself in the basement, the can of Lysol, and hold on for dear life, because it's coming. If you're not sick, you're going to be sick. You know, just embrace it and embrace the toilet, I guess. Anyway, this week's news includes some strange large bird sightings in Alaska and North Carolina. Tiger sitting quiet in the farm in the night. It's my attempt at a poem. MUFON sighting statistics for January, and last week's prediction might just shake your foundation. And yeah, we'll talk about that Mad Mike and his launch attempt that falls flat again. Ba-dum-bum. Anyway, let's see. Well, reset here and talk the who's bringing this to you. This week's news is brought to you by the Institute of Metaphysical Humanistic Science. IMHS is a premier online and distance learning university that offers high-quality doctorate and doctoral PhD metaphysics degrees that will enhance your life and career, even if your career is not in the metaphysics field. Metaphysics is the scientific study of consciousness, existence, and reality, and includes such topics as theoretical mathematics to quantum physics to cosmology to psychic phenomena. Metaphysical humanistic science, also called metaphysical humanism, is simply our term for the study of metaphysics focused on understanding and enhancing the human condition and all that it encompasses. For more information on the Institute of Metaphysical Humanistic Science, visit metaphysicsinstitute.org. It always seems like it takes me 10 minutes to read that, but I guess it wasn't. Let's see. Well, I made the announcement on Facebook, and a lot of stuff has been happening with my conference on the side. It seems like every day something is going. One day I'm excited, another day something's going on. I had to fix it, but the conference, the Twinsburg Paranormal Conference, is shifting out of Twinsburg. I know it's weird, but I had some issues with venues. But luckily, I'm a researcher and I'm a planner as well. I like to plan events, large events, I have no problem with. And I always have a plan, a backup plan on top of a backup plan, just in case something goes wrong. One way or the other, this is going to take place somewhere. But it's changed locations. It's now going to take place at the Walton Hills Community Center in Walton Hills, Ohio. It's a little village. It's actually a village. So there's village people there. Yeah, well, anyway, it's Twinsburg is still one of the larger cities near there. It's actually, we're closer now to the casino that's there. So hopefully nobody's going to go and start gambling and doing anything. The Hard Rock Roxino is right down the street, so. Pretty close to some fun stuff there, but it's only going about 8-9 miles down the road. Pretty much the same road though, so not a major deal. It was just unfortunately a setback. I was hoping to get this thing going without a hitch, but there was a hitch. but not a major hitch, in my opinion. I solved it, fixed it, and I'm moving on. And apologize to Dita and Paul in the chat room. I didn't know that you guys were there. Chat room wasn't working, I guess. I had to refresh, and boom, I see all this stuff. Pop it up there in the chat room. So, yeah, sorry, guys. I'm here. I'm alive. Wasn't ignoring you. And you can also pop into the chat room if you're listening live or, you know, like to listen live in the future. Although one thing is going to change going forward. Starting next week, next Tuesday, February 13th, the show will now shift to 8 p.m. 8 p.m. Eastern. So you'll have a little bit more time to get ready. And those people in Central Time, you won't have to rush home from work to listen. You can take your time. And hopefully people on the West Coast can listen to the show as well. It's just a good move overall. And for me, my job, unfortunately, I had to get up awful early to go to work, either 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock in the morning, depending upon what was going on. And it makes for a very short night if I'm on the radio till 9 and doing all this other stuff. But new position at work, very excited about that. So the show will benefit and will be on an hour later, starting next week, 8 p.m. Eastern, same channel, WCJVRadio.com. And you can listen live in a lot of different places. So, hey, you know what? No excuses. But anyway, just talking about the Twinsburg Paranormal Conference. If you're interested in any sort of ghost conference, UFO conference, cryptozoology conference, I highly recommend you check out, not just because it's my website. If it wasn't my website, well, it'd be kind of awkward because I'm the one putting all the work into it. If I was an outsider, I would really enjoy this website, paranewsinsider.com. Click on the events tab at the top. It's one of the best listings you're going to find out there on paranormal conferences and conventions, as well as UFO and cryptozoological conferences and things like that. So do have a little bit of updating to do. I know a couple of people emailed me a few days ago, and I haven't got back to update this stuff. UFO conference. And yeah, I haven't updated this in a couple of days, and I do have some more research. I'm just a little bit behind because of everything I'm planning in preparation for convention going on. And I'll get it up. I'm on vacation next week, so I'll have everything a little bit more updated than what it is. But it's a very, I don't know what the word would be, thick list. A lot of stuff here. A lot of events going on all throughout the United States. And this is just North America, pretty much just United States and Canada. Not going to lie. I don't really see too much happening in Mexico anyway. But nonetheless, it's a very good list. And again, highly recommend you not only check it out, but bookmark it as well and keep checking it because it does update. And that's why at the top there, you'll see updated. I had updated February 1st. Okay, so it's only 5 days old. So I do update it frequently, and I will be adding events. Sometimes events get canceled, and I'll just cross it off. And when it's over, I just cross it off there on the computer, not on my screen. You'll see it too. It's this fancy schmancy thing called HTML that we do. And so you can keep tabs on what's going on, what's current. I do the best I can to keep this up to date and current. Now, I don't know everything. I tend to sound like I do sometimes, maybe. I don't know. But I don't know every event that's going on. So that's where you come in, the listener. If you know about any event, you have any information about any paranormal-related event, cryptozoology, UFOs, I don't care how big or how small. If it's something that's happening once, let me know. And I'll get it on the website. If I get time, I'll talk about it. If you bribe me, I'll definitely talk about it. And even if you have a repeating class or anything like that, I do put those on. I'm a little reluctant to sometimes, but I will do it. Exceptions can always be made. And I really think that these things are important. That's why I'm hosting my own event, because these things are important. It's good to get out there and meet other people, especially people that you've never met. that you want to learn from and network with. And there's so much information that is exchanged at these types of events. It's, if you're involved in this in any way, shape, or form, you've got to get out there and get to one of these conventions. They are important. It's not going to be life-altering, or you might not agree with everything. I don't know. It's just an experience, and I highly recommend that you get out to one of these things. So paranewsinsider.com, click on the events tab at the top. It's a great place to start to find information on these conferences and conventions. And I can't do it without you guys. I mean, I can research the heck out of everything, but I really, really enjoy when I get emails from people saying, hey, can you advertise this or can you put that? Definitely. I'll take the time to do it. I might take a couple of days, but I'll get it on the website. And if I do get time, I do like to mention conferences and conventions. Don't always have the time, depending upon what's going on. You got a slew of stuff coming up here in March and April. That's pretty much the kickoff to the paranormal season, if there is a kickoff to the paranormal season. That's why I snuck mine in early, February 17th. I had to beat this is pretty much the latest that I wanted to do. And I knew with Valentine's Day, a lot of people like to get married around that time, and they fill up these halls. And so I got lucky and got a date at two different places and was able to secure it at both. But yeah, if you're planning on going or thinking about going to the Twinsburg Paranormal Conference, go to twinsburgparanormal.com and you can see the updated location. Photographs of this place. It's beautiful. It's newly renovated. It's about the same size. They say it fits 250 people quite comfortably, but it's a beautiful location, just renovated late last year. It's up to date. It's high tech. It's neat. It's beautiful. It's actually a converted church. So anyway, that's conferences, conventions, and I'm Brian Parsons. And this is the Paranormal News Insider, in case you weren't aware. Well, we should do some news then. What do you think? I mentioned I'm on vacation next week. I do have a couple of shows that I'll be doing in anticipation or preparation. Not really preparation for the event on the 17th, February 17th. But since got some downtime, I'm going to do some appearances. And I'll be on, let's see, After Hours, AM with America's Most Haunted Radio. And that's with Joel Sturgis and Eric Olson. I didn't know that we live like a couple miles away from each other, but okay. Sometimes that's just how it goes. And I'll also be on a show for Real Ghost Stories Online Radio. It's supposed to be a new thing coming up, but I'll have more information next week. I don't know what day that's going to be, but it's different. I like doing new shows. It's fun. Yeah, well, I'm on vacation, Dita, but I'll still do a show. I'll have plenty of time. And it's the first week that we go on at 8 p.m., so looking forward to that. Staying up late. I have to wear my slippers on the air. It's a little bit too much information for you guys. But anyway, let's jump into cryptid news. And cryptid news this week, well, kind of a sad way to kick it off. I don't mean to bring everybody down, but I'm sure a lot of you that are into cryptozoology has heard about this. And I don't normally talk about researchers who have passed away, especially in the cryptid field. I don't know. It just seems like lately there's a name every couple of weeks. Or every week, John Bendernagel, just kind of reading. I guess it was January 18th it was reported. He passed away a couple of weeks ago, and that was a little shocking for people. But now, Saturday, February 3rd, J.C. Johnson, the founder and president of Crypto Four Corners, passed away due to complications following a long bout with pneumonia. And there was a huge outpouring of shock and love at the same time. And he was such a good friend to so many people in the cryptid field. And it just really a good figure and a very strong person, a strong researcher out there for a lot of people to lean on. And I didn't have very much interaction with him, but he seemed like a great guy. And we weren't really friends on Facebook, but I know we had a couple of conversations a few times in things. But he was a really valued researcher, and it's sad to see people, you know, that are actively involved in this field passing away. And, you know, unfortunately, a lot of us, we fade away, and then, you know, we pass away. And it's harder when you see people that are involved in this field pass away. When they're involved in it. And I was thinking, why don't we hear more about ghost investigators or UFO and researchers passing away? And I think it's because people are so involved in cryptozoology and they stick with it a lot longer than a lot of people. I can name hundreds of people in the ghost field that have come and gone. They just come in, they do what they want to do, and they fade away. They quit. They move on to something else. They just don't like it, or they get tired of it, and they just, I don't know, they go away. They hang up their acronym on their paranormal group, and they fade away. And they, you know, they're gone. And same with UFO people. UFO people come and go, and it seems like a lot of those researchers are getting very, very old. You don't really have a lot of young, prominent researchers. And you know, most of the people involved in UFOs, unfortunately, are hoaxers. And I guess you could say that there's a ton of hoaxers involved in cryptozoology. But I just think that cryptozoology has just a, I don't want to say a larger network of people, just the people that are stronger. And they, I don't want to say heavier beliefs, because, you know, everything that we believe in is questionable. And science says that none of this stuff exists. But it just seems to be people that are more dug in to the cryptid field than anywhere else. And it's hard to lose a member of that. And for a lot of people, it's like losing a family member, because everyone in cryptozoology, whether we like each other or not, we end up talking to each other in one shape or another over time. It just happens. And it's just hard to lose somebody who's kind of a foundation or an anchor for other people or other researchers and investigators. So kind of a sad moment. And, you know, every year, Lauren Coleman released a list of cryptozoologists who have passed away in the past year, and, you know, people who are involved in cryptozoology. And it just seems like, gosh, you just read through that list and it just gets longer and longer every year, people that you know. And the longer you're in this field, the more people you know. And J.C. Johnson will sorely be missed by quite a few people in this field. And sticking with cryptozoology, we have a couple of large bird sightings. Don't really get to cover these that often, so it's exciting. Really, it's truly exciting to cover this. And it's not always something I completely believe in. I love watching birds, identifying birds. I've been able to, very fortunate to see bald eagles in Ohio and Washington State, Alaska, quite a few other large raptor birds as well in Ohio and different states too. I love watching birds and enjoying it. Not like feeding birds like pigeons on a bench or anything crazy like that, but, you know, just out in the wild. And speaking of Alaska, this first story is an interesting story, I think, from Alaska's capital city. And the story started on the Facebook page. Imagine that, a Facebook page starting a story off. And it was called the Juno Community Collective. Now, the eyewitness, Tabitha Bauer, described her sighting in the post where she said, quote, "I was just driving by the movie theater in the valley, and there was a huge black bird flying above the road. The wingspan had to be at least 20 feet. It was almost as wide as the road. I have lived here all my life and have seen... I've never seen anything like that. It freaked me out. It was not a raven or an eagle. This isn't a joke. This thing was huge, almost the size of a small airplane. Did anyone else see it?" Unquote. Well, there were some responses, but most joked about pterodactyls or basically made fun of her. But a few others shared similar sightings in the area over the last few decades. And you always have that. People come out. They didn't tell other people. They've never mentioned it in public or whatever. And they just have these stories. And so it's kind of expected when things like this happen. And when I follow large cat sightings, people will come out and say stuff. Oh, yeah, I saw 1971. I saw one myself. It happens. Now, Bauer contacted the Juneau Empire newspaper and further explained her sighting, where she said, quote, "I looked up, and right at that point, there was a gigantic, huge blackbird flying above my truck. It was basically following the roadway along the treetops. I slowed down to get a better look at it. It was heading toward the glacier. The wingspan was almost as wide as the road. It was the biggest thing I have ever seen in my life. It was very concerning. I've never seen anything like that," unquote. So I guess it was big, and I guess she's never seen anything that big flying, maybe with the exception of a float plane. Now, she described the bird she saw on January 16th as being jet black with a short tail. And she said it had a body of 6 to 8 feet long, was flying level with the treetops going north while she was headed south toward the Juneau International Airport. The Juneau Empire seems to have done a very nice job reporting this story, as they contacted the FAA, the Federal Aviation Administration, to see if potentially this could have been a glider or a drone or even an airplane that was in the area. They also contacted U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service raptor biologist Steve Lewis, who stated there could be a few candidates ranging from a black-footed albatross, which has a wingspan of 6 to 8 feet. That's huge, folks. That's pretty huge for a bird. To less likely, a Steller's eagle, and even potentially an immature female bald eagle. And the reason for that is younger bald eagles, they have larger feathers, and they could actually appear to be larger than what they really are based on these fluffy feathers. But I would think everyone in that part of Alaska would be very familiar with all sizes and types and ages of bald eagles. Now, the Steller eagle is not normally a resident of that area. And the black-footed albatross, now these normally stick to the open water, or at least the coastline. Now, it's possible that the winds on the Pacific Ocean might have brought the bird further inland. Although this area is located, I don't really remember, about 60, 70 miles away from the open ocean. That's in what's called the Inside Passage. So there's a couple of islands that block the open ocean from the area where Juneau is located. And this is the area, the Inside Passage. If you've ever been on a cruise to Alaska, more than likely this is the area that you passed through. It's very good, too, because the winds of the Pacific Ocean, if you're along that coastline, it's I don't care. If it's beautiful out, it's still windy and very choppy out there in the Pacific. Now, this is where I have visited Juneau via cruise ships twice, once back in 2006, actually for my honeymoon, and once in 2016 for my 10-year anniversary. Very good planner, see? Now, both times, we were actually on that same road, not on the ship, but on a bus, on the same exact road where this witness said she saw this bird. And I remember some of the points where she was talking about, and I remember seeing some of these buildings. And if you look at a map, it looks like it's in the middle of a city. It's very crowded, but it's really not. There are mountains on both sides of this road. It's actually a valley created by the Mendenhall Glacier. And so it's a valley, and you see the trees up on both sides, mountains on both sides, tree cover, not snow cover, not in that area along the coast. But it's, you never know. It could be all kinds of stuff flying around there. If you're not familiar with the area, it's a little spooky. I mean, you do feel like you're on the edge of the wilderness, which you really technically are. But and like I said, I think anybody in that area is going to be able to recognize a bald eagle, no matter if it's a juvenile, a female, or a male. I couldn't even tell you how many bald eagles I've seen in Juneau alone. Probably the first time, probably 15 or 20. This last time, probably about the same, 20 or maybe even 30, all over the place from around the where the cruise ships are. They swoop down and will pull salmon right out of the water right in front of you, and they will collect in trees. If you know what you're looking for, you can see them all over the place, and they fly around. You have to have your eyes open and look around. But I'm very sure that people would be familiar with that. They do get pretty big. So whatever this woman saw had to be pretty darn big. And as far as the black-footed albatross, I think that's probably, if it is a logical explanation, probably a winner. And I've never seen one that I remember, but from the size of it or from the look of it, they're pretty sizable birds. But who knows? Like I said, it's a pretty interesting area. And Juneau is, you've probably read or heard, it's inaccessible by road. So you're either going in by boat or you're going in by plane. And it's surrounded by glaciers. It's just rugged wilderness. And it's pretty close to British Columbia right there, and pretty close to the Yukon Territory as well there in Western Canada. So it's pretty remote stuff. So even though it's the capital city and it's a lot of people that live there, it's not a huge city by any means. It's still on the edge of the wilderness. So let me get a link. I'll throw that link in the chat room. So if you're in the chat room, you get easy and quick access to all the links of the stories that I talk about. And you don't have to wait to the middle of the week. Talking about rum in the chat room. See what you're missing out on by not being in the chat room. Yeah, well, but I do like to share the links live in the chat room. You don't have to be in the chat room, but listening live is, it's always recommended, highly recommended. But you do, you get the links. But again, I will put that out there on Facebook. My Facebook for Paranews and the Paranormal News Insider is Paranews Insider. And that's connected to Twitter, which is at Paranews Insider. So all that stuff will come out during the week. And I usually only put out one, maybe two posts a week. So I'm not going to overwhelm you with too much information, but get that vital stuff out to you so you can read about it yourselves and make your own judgment. I'm not telling you what to think. I'm not telling you what's actually happening unless I have the report that it actually is this way. But I do my best to sort and separate things as how I think things are going and get that information out to you so you are more informed, is that the right way to say that? More well-informed than you would be if you're just reading a headline or getting the story from somebody else that's just wants you to believe everything. Now, I want to believe too, but I also believe in finding the truth to these stories, and that's what I do. And that's why I may sound a little skeptical at times, because I dig for the truth. And speaking of digging, I have no idea what digging has to do with this story other than I really dig another flying large creature story. That was horrible. Probably the worst segue in paranormal radio history. But anyway, 20-year-old Cynthia Lee saw and filmed an odd-looking flying bird. Obviously, they all fly, but it was flying at the time. While she was taking an Uber in North Raleigh, North Carolina last month. And I've been working on getting somebody to do with an Uber into one of these stories somehow, some way. So I finally did it. I know. Go ahead, roll your eyes. That's fine. Now, of her encounter, Cynthia said, quote, "It had a long tail with a diamond-shaped bulb on it, and it was dark brown. And it had this weird crest," unquote. Now, a crest on its head, and she did a crude, simple little drawing. It's smiling. It must be happy. And her description and drawing it might remind you of a pterosaur, of which most people are pretty familiar with pterodactyl. You probably heard of a pterodactyl. Now think Jurassic Park 3. I know there's been so many of them. There's another new one coming out lately. There's only one with pterodactyls in it, I'm pretty sure. There's one that was like crawling on the bridge towards them. You know, they saw him flying at the end. Okay, you're with me. Now, these are not flying dinosaurs, as many people think, as they actually don't even fit the definition of dinosaurs. And, well, did I mention? Yeah, North Carolina, so didn't want to lose you there. Let me take a breath here, and I'm going to let you know that you're listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York, emanating live at WCJVradio.com. And you're listening to the Paranormal News Insider with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And we're talking big birds. Not big bird, but big birds. Now, this sighting by 20-year-old Cynthia Lee in North Raleigh, North Carolina. Now, a lot of people, once this hit the news, a lot of people dismissed this sighting. And experts are also saying that's probably more than likely a great blue heron, which is one of my favorite birds, especially when I kayak. See them all the time. They're very panicky, very big, and kind of noisy, but they're beautiful birds. Now, this could be a simple, I don't know, simple mistake of identity here. However, for Cynthia, this is actually her third time that she's described seeing a similar bird to this. So what's going on? Now, she claims she had sightings last year in June and July, although those creatures did not have crests, nor did she describe them as having feathers, which is weird. Now, Cynthia is also said to be studying as a veterinary technician, and along with her three sightings, she also states her mother and uncle had a sighting when both of them were children. Now, this curiosity led her to look for pterosaur sightings online, which helped her find a man named Jonathan Whitcomb, who is a self-described modern pterosaur expert. And he's another person I've been trying to wedge into this show for a while. I've read his work. Okay, I'll leave that alone. Now, Whitcomb researches pterosaur sightings and believes that they're still around, still flapping their wings, despite disappearing from the fossil record almost 66 million years ago. That's a long time. But don't forget, people thought the coelacanth was also extinct for 65 million years. People are still pulling them out of the ocean today. Now, Whitcomb is also a creationist and an evolution denier. Mark Cartmill, a professor of evolutionary anthropology at Duke University and possibly a little bit more of an expert on ancient creatures than Whitcomb, states, quote, "I can't believe that if there were living pterosaurs in North America, three centuries of naturalists, explorers, farmers, hunters, trappers, and biologists would have never run across a single specimen, living or dead. What do these big flying animals eat? Where do they roost? I'd rank it as being slightly more probable than living unicorns in Raleigh and Durham, but only slightly," unquote. Well, that was a nice response. Now, other scientists are a little bit more straightforward in their response about the matter. Lindsay Zano, assistant research professor and head of paleontology at the North Carolina Museum of Natural Science, bluntly said, quote, "Pterosaurs are extinct and have been for 65 million years," unquote. Wow, the life of the party for sure. Thanks for your input. Well, she's right, though. I mean, probably didn't want to get too involved in the conversation. So, is this a case of mistaken identity? Three times. I don't know. Nobody else saw it. The Uber driver in her latest sighting, he did not see this creature. She did get video of it. So there is a video that's attached to the link that I'm going to send out. Yeah, you better put your seatbelt on when you're watching this. You get a little dizzy. And it's very blurry. And yeah, if you have motion sickness, you might not want to watch it. It's kind of all over the place. And there is something flapping its wings and moving, but it's really hard to distinguish what you're looking at. Yeah, even if you motion capture it, I really don't know what you're going to see here. But at least you got a video of it. Everyone has a camera. That's what everyone says, right? Now, one thing, I know this is going to sound outlandish, and I'm not trying to wash this away, but I just kind of thought about this. Now, it's possible, and again, two sightings happened last year, June and July. Now, it's possible maybe Cynthia heard about the Chicago Phantom sightings during the summer last year, and maybe this had a little bit to do with that. Granted, she didn't say it was like a Mothman thing, but still, it might have got the gears turning. I don't know. Now, what do you think? I mean, do you guys think pterosaurs are still flying around in the sky? I don't know. Now, I've heard quite a few firsthand accounts of thunderbirds, especially here in Ohio, Pennsylvania. And I've talked to some people in West Virginia that have seen them as well, especially from a couple of people that really know their animals very, very well. But I've never had a pterosaur sighting, so I don't know. I mean, I think it's a long time for these creatures to not have been seen for such a large creature. But what are these people seeing in the sky? I don't know. I don't know. We'll have to keep our eyes in the sky and see if we can find anything. So anyway, here's the link. And again, yeah, there's a video in that. Put your seatbelt on. And, well, we have one more. I listen because this story reminded me of something, and it's frustrating because I find the story that I knew that related this to, but nonetheless, I do remember it. I'll have to do some more research later on tomorrow after the show. I don't know, sometime, but I want to dig to find this answer. But a scary incident occurred in Scotland. Dealing with an exotic animal. Now, the crisis was averted. No injuries were reported. And this took place on Saturday. A farmer phoned police and stated he saw a tiger on the loose, and it was actually sitting near his cows. And the farmer was a little nervous about this. I was able to take a picture of this tiger from quite a little bit of a distance here. You want to be safe, right? Now, the police responded. They attempted to find out while there, I guess, some of these officers were en route, but they were trying to find out if someone had a tiger on the loose. A local zoo or a menagerie had lost a creature, lost a tiger, misplaced it, I don't know, let it wander out in the woods. I don't know what happens at these places, how these animals get out, but I guess it happens. But to no avail. Now, those who responded took extra care to approach the tiger with caution, slowly creeping up on this animal. But once the beast was within reach, it was discovered to be nothing more than a stuffed animal. Now, it's weird to me because the blurry picture this guy took from behind the tiger, you can see cows, and they're just kind of like hanging out. They got their heads stuffed through this thing, and they're just kind of looking toward the camera like, you got some hay? They're just hanging out. Now, if there's a tiger sitting there, first of all, I don't think it's just going to curl up in the middle of the dirt. I'm pretty sure the cows probably not used to seeing tigers in the wild. I'm just going to throw that out there. But I would think if there's a large cat, they'd be a little nervous. And I don't think a tiger is going to sit there ultra still and ultra quiet. They're not stealth predators. They're not ambush predators. I don't know. I guess the farmer didn't know. And the bigger question to me, still unanswered, nobody knows where the large stuffed tiger came from. But Police seem to think that this was a genuine call that turned out to be false. And it's weird. It's funny, I guess, to an extent. But when I saw this story, I was like, wait a minute, that sounds familiar. And I do know a story. I remember a story. I honestly can't remember where it happened. But I do remember police responding. And I think the woman fell down or something and she got really close. She was really, really nervous. And then they found out it was a I can't remember if it was this one was a lion or a tiger, but it was sitting basically in an alley and they saw this thing and everybody thought it was funny. I remember it being on the news. I remember reporting it, but I couldn't find a link for that one. But when I was searching for it, I found one that occurred in September of 2014 where a woman in Arkansas called police after she spotted what she thought was a severely injured or dead tiger on the side of the road. And she was afraid to approach it, but when police arrived, they realized it was just a large stuffed toy tiger. And back in May of 2011, a similar incident occurred in the United Kingdom to the initial one that I mentioned, where witnesses saw a tiger sitting on the ground. It wasn't the same one, but it looked awful close. This one was kind of like a white tiger, and armed officers and even a helicopter were dispatched. A local cricket field was evacuated, only to discover a large stuffed white tiger toy. So I guess this happens quite a bit. That's at least four stories that I know of that I was able to find within about 20 minutes prior to the show coming on tonight. That's so weird. It's a rash. It's something. Maybe somebody needs to write a book about that. I don't know. But seemingly interesting stuff that people just randomly leaving stuffed tigers laying around. But it's better than eating Tide Pods, I guess. So I guess everything has its pluses and minuses. And nobody got hurt. And let me throw, yeah, and clowns. Let's hope we don't have to talk about that ever again. Throw these witnesses in there. Absolutely. Well, I'll throw the links in there. The witnesses, they can go wherever they want to go. But we're going to jump to UFO news now. We're going to talk about the Mutual UFO Network, or MUFON, as some of you know. Now, they've released their UFO sighting statistics for January of 2018. And last month, I broke down the entire year of MUFON sighting statistics and made my prediction for January. And I have no idea what show that was, but that would have been. Oh, I don't see it. Okay, January 9th. So if you're curious about what happened all of December and the all of 2017 and for December, you can go back to the January 9th show, and you can obviously find those archives at paranewsinsider.com, iTunes, Mixcloud, Spreaker, Podbean. My goodness, I could go on for 45 minutes. Podcast is everywhere, so you can find it pretty much probably wherever you download your favorite stuff. And I know we all have our favorite place to download our podcasts and stuff, and I have mine. You have yours. So I've tried to make this show available to as many different places as I can. And it's also available in a lot of places under our parent, under my home, WCJV Digital Broadcasting. So you can find the network shows as well as my show Standing Alone on its own out there somewhere. But back to MUFON. And I made my prediction. I've really been horrible at these predictions, predicting what MUFON would report for the total worldwide sightings, as well as what would happen here in the United States for the month. I've been way off. So in January, I made my prediction of 685 total worldwide sightings and 471 sightings here in the United States for the month of January. Now, MUFON reports show that they collected drumroll, 690. 690, and I predicted 685. That's awful good, I think. That puts me within 1%. That's awful good. Maybe I'll play the lottery this week. Not too shabby. However, while I guessed 471 U.S. sightings, MUFON reported 495. Okay. Burst my bubble. That's still within 5%. That's not bad. It's not as good as the total sightings, but I'll take it. Now, the United Kingdom turned in the next highest amount with 45 sightings. Canada was next with 44. France had 31. Australia and India had 6 reports each. And the Netherlands had 5. 34 other countries turned in 4 or less reports, with 20 of those only turning in 1 report each. That includes Antarctica. And I always mention Antarctica because it's, first of all, it's so remote. And there's not that many people there, obviously. And a majority of the people that are in Antarctica are scientists. And the rest are probably cooks. So I always find that interesting when people are reporting UFOs in Antarctica. Especially when there's not a whole lot of air traffic down there either. Now, looking at the 471 U.S. sightings by state, we'll find that California is at the top with 67 sightings, as they should, because once again, California leads the country in population. So if a state leads in population, that state should have, by statistical means, should have the most sightings of something like this. So it's not a shocker. Now, Florida is next with 46 sightings, quite a drop off from 67. Texas had 24, Illinois had 22, Washington State had 21, Pennsylvania had 18, Ohio had 17, Colorado 14, New York 13, Nevada and North Carolina had 12 each, and Georgia, Louisiana, Arizona, Massachusetts, Michigan, and Missouri had 11 reports each. Tennessee turned in 10, and 30 other states, including the District of Columbia, turned in 9 or fewer reports. Now, D.C. turned in 2, but again, none of those were on the White House lawn. And none of those picked up the president either. Now, looking at the per capita breakdown for January, MUFON doesn't do this anymore. They used to do this years ago. Sadly, it kind of points out just how statistically insignificant these UFO sightings are. But I think it's important to continue to collect them. And I think it's important to point out which states are reporting a little heavier than others during the months. Now, it's also important to note that these numbers of sightings do not indicate how many UFOs were actually seen by people within the month time frame. This just means how many people or how many actual reports were filed into MUFON in that time frame. So one, let's say California with their 67 sightings, maybe 20 of those could have happened 50 years ago. We don't know. They could have happened 2 months ago, 6 months ago. So it's not really stringent and strict in that time frame. But a majority of them usually are, from my research into these their case management system and going through other cases and reading through the reports. Overwhelming majority of the cases usually happen within that month time frame. Now, obviously, you have the beginning of the month. You may have some that are bleeding over from the previous month. There's a little bit of a layover effect. And again, some historical sightings are typically turned in during the year. But overall, you can kind of use these as kind of a guideline, as a golf score, whatever you want to call it. And again, I don't take these as super serious numbers, but I do like to look at the per capita. And essentially, this is the numbers per 100,000 people using the population data from 2016 estimates. And, well, California is a good example. They turned in, again, 67 reports. And if you break that down per 100,000 people, it's only 0.171. So 0.171 of 100,000 people. So it's like some guy's leg of one person. So it's less than a person, basically. 17% of a person's body. I don't know, it's creepy to say it that way. But so 0.171. If you look at the United States as a whole, the total population with the number of reports that were reported, 0.148 is the U.S. average. So anything above that is a little higher, is a little bit maybe more significant. Anything below that is pretty much insignificant. Florida, which is the number three state in population, had 46 sightings. Okay. They turned in a 0.223 per capita. So it's much bigger than California, even though California had that larger number at 67. Florida's number was a little bit more significant. Not a lot more significant, just a little bit. Washington State, they're number 13 in population overall. They had a 0.288, so even higher than Florida, and they turned in 21 reports. Nevada, which is number 34 as far as state population, they had only 12 reports, which doesn't sound like much, but their per capita was 0.408. And New Mexico, which is number 36 in population, they turned in 9 reports, not very much, but their per capita, 0.432. So almost one in every 200,000 people reported seeing one. Montana, number 44 in population, they turned in a 0.384 with their 4 sightings. And Alaska, the 48th state as far as population, turned in a 0.404 with 3 sightings. Vermont, number 49 as far as state population, 0.320, or I guess 0.32. When I get technical, with their 2 sightings. So see what 2 sightings will get you down there in Vermont, and what it takes elsewhere takes a lot more. District of Columbia, number 49, if you're taking it into a state, actually slightly more population than Vermont, not by much. They turned in a 0.294 with their 2 reports. So you see just a little bit of increase in population, and their per capita drops, 0.294 versus Vermont's 0.32 with the same amount of sightings. So I like to look at that as just kind of a gauge. It's a loose gauge. It's not scientific. It's not perfect statistics because, again, there's a lot of variables, like I mentioned, reports not being turned in that month, and a lot of these may be solved. A lot of them may be could be hoaxes. They could be misinterpretations. These are just what's reported, and I'm just looking at the numbers. But I think it's interesting just to kind of chew on them a little bit and talk about these numbers and just kind of put things in a little bit different of a perspective. And so if I had to pick a winner this month, I guess I'll go with New Mexico. Why not? 0.432 with their 9 sightings, really kind of insignificant when you're talking per capita and as well as the number of sightings. But they were pretty much the highest one I had there. The absolute highest I had. Nevada was a little lower, but they had only 3 more sightings. So congratulations, New Mexico. You're the winner for January, as far as I'm concerned. Now, February. Notice I'm excited about this now because I got close. I got within 1%. February, I'm going to predict 662 total worldwide sightings. And I'm going to go with 451 U.S. sightings. Write it down. Put it on the calendar at the beginning of next month's show. We'll see. And big thanks to Audrey Hamilton for this month's sighting statistics. And we'll see her. Well, I'll see her. Maybe you will too. I don't know. In a couple weeks at the Twinsburg Paranormal Conference at Walton Hills. She's going to be talking about 1966 sighting in Presque Isle. She's done a lot of research on this, so I'm excited to see her presentation. It's going to be good. You're going to miss out. It's a lot of great UFO stuff. Also going to have Aaron Clark there talking about the Cleveland Ufology Project. Again, check it out. TwinsburgParanormal.com. It's going to be a good time. You get to meet me. You get to hang out with me. Talk shop. I won't be under any pressure at all because I'm running the whole thing, right? Yeah, I'll be running around with my head cut off. But it's going to be a good time, and I'm looking forward to that. So thank you, Audrey. Look forward to seeing you in just a few days, 11 days out. Not that I'm counting. And let's do some other news real quick before we hang out for the week. Now, last week I talked about the Super Blue Blood Moon Total Eclipse Extravaganza End of the World Celebration 2018. Seemed like it kept getting longer and longer every time anybody talked about that thing. Was that the official name? The Super Blue Blood Moon Total Eclipse Extravaganza End of the World Celebration 2018? It should have been. Should be on a t-shirt. Anyway, I mentioned Frank Hoogerbeets. How could you forget the name Frank Hoogerbeets? That's not made up. That's the name that's in the report. Now, Frank Hoogerbeets, he issued a warning that between January 30th and February 2nd, there would be a magnitude 6 to a 7 earthquake somewhere on planet Earth. Now, this warning came from his knowledge, I guess I should say, rather belief, that planetary alignments are thought to cause earthquakes. Now, he states that full moons and supermoons can affect seismic activity, but adding a planetary alignment is a recipe for a major earthquake. Well, scientists do not agree with that at all. And there's actually some science stuff out there that says you're not even close. But how was his prediction? Well, I don't know about you, but I was paying very close attention to seismic activity throughout those days and documented it through the USGS website and kept track during that time frame. Now, I wasn't sure because does it go on my time or does it go on local time or does it go on universal time? Coordinated time. So I went with universal coordinated time. And looking at the most significant earthquakes in that time frame, it appears that his prophecy came true. Wow. Falling over in my chair. I can't believe it. The prediction happened. Good thing you didn't predict the end of the world. Granted, I don't think I'd be here talking about it. Now, between January 30th and February 2nd, there was a 6.1 magnitude earthquake in Afghanistan. That happened on January 31st at 7:07 Universal Coordinated Time. It's also known as UTC, and that's because it's I think I talked about this before. The United States, obviously, we say Universal Coordinated Time. In France, in French, it comes out differently. And so we've kind of just agreed to call it UTC. I don't know. You don't want to go to war with the French. Anyway, he's a genius. He predicted the earthquake, and he came in under the wire there, 6.1. Barely made it. So he's a genius, right? I mean, USGS should hire this guy to predict earthquakes. I mean, if we employed him, he could save millions of lives, right? I mean, he predicted it. Matter of factly, there's no questioning it, no doubting it. Okay, well, you know me better than that. not so fast. Now, looking further at this data, you can see that a magnitude 6 or higher earthquake over the last 30 days appeared almost every other day. January 10th, there was a 7.5 magnitude earthquake near Honduras. January 11th, a 6 magnitude earthquake hit near Burma. January 14th, a 7.1 magnitude earthquake hit near Peru. January 19th in Mexico, a 6.3 magnitude earthquake was felt. January 21st, a 6.3 magnitude earthquake in Chile. And the largest earthquake to date in 2018 was a 7.9 magnitude earthquake 280 kilometers south of Kodiak, Alaska on January 23rd. January 24th, a 6.2 magnitude earthquake was measured in Japan. January 26th, a 6.3 magnitude earthquake happened near Papua New Guinea. January 28th, a 6.6 magnitude earthquake was measured near Africa. And again, I mentioned the 6.1 that took place on January 31st that sadly killed one and injured at least five from the reports that I was able to see. So, yeah, I know it's 30 days, so it's a small sample size, but look, a lot of these were the next day or every other day. That's a lot to happen in 30 days. So it's not too much of a stretch of the imagination. If I'm going to say over the course of 3 days that a magnitude 6 or higher would happen, because it's right here. The last 30 days, it happened almost every other day. So it's kind of like just making a random guess. I mean, it's actually a little bit more of an informed guess. He must follow this stuff. He must know what's going on. And he must know that a magnitude 6 happens pretty much every 2 to 3 days anyway. So it wasn't a long shot. It's a pretty good guess. Now, if you would have said within an hour time frame, or you know, within the peak of the full moon or the peak of this planetary alignment at this exact time frame, I would have been impressed, really impressed. But it didn't happen. Now, so over 25 days that I mentioned, 12 earthquakes at or above a magnitude 6, which again translates to just about every other day. So much for the full moon and planetary alignments being responsible. Dr. Susan Howe of the U.S. Geological Survey has concluded this belief and has no basis after matching dates and lunar phases more than 400 earthquakes of magnitude 8 or larger. And her data shows no significance with the new or full moon have any effect on earthquakes, let alone planetary alignments, whatever that means. Because that's just perspective. That's just what we think. It's planets are never perfectly aligned. It's just a matter of perspective. Well, that's an old link. I'll throw that link in the chat room. You guys can read that. Last but not least, got to talk about this guy. This has been going on, I don't know how long. Mad Mike Hughes, you probably heard about this again. He's at it once again. His bid to launch his steam rocket has fallen flat. That's right. In another scrubbed attempt on Saturday, February 3rd, he described in various details how he attempted to launch the rocket. It just didn't operate correctly, even though he kind of corrected himself and stumbled over his explanations a number of times. Now, his goal is to launch himself a whopping 1,800 feet into the air. Wow. And take photographs, all the while strapped into a steam-powered rocket that's out of control, in order to prove that there's no curve to the Earth like we are accustomed to in photographs. Now, scientists will tell you that you have to be at least 35,000 feet up in the air to see the curve of the Earth, and you would need a good view of the horizon. No clouds, a nice solid view of the horizon. And it helps if you get a little bit higher, especially higher than 1,800 feet, Mad Mike. Now, you can also see this if you go to the beach or you're out in the ocean and you view distant objects. I know a lot of the flat Earth people they'll argue that. They'll say it's perspective. And then they'll go on to make something sciencey that makes absolutely no real sense whatsoever. So will Mad Mike ever launch his steam-powered flat Earth rocket? I don't know. I'm sure once he's received a little bit more attention than what he's already had, he might actually get off the ground. But I'd say even if he's launched 50 miles up and sees the curve with his own eyes, I doubt he'll ever be convinced. It seems like these flat Earth people, they've made up their mind. They don't care what kind of evidence you give them. Their minds are made up. Now, I did plan on talking about a book of the week that I talked about last week, but it's complicated, and I didn't really have one chosen for this week. So I apologize for those of you that like to listen to the book of the week. I'm a little behind. Haven't had too much chance to read stuff, and a couple of them kind of looking at to report to you very soon. I know you guys look forward to that. And I love reading. And I think educating yourself is very, very important. And entertaining yourself, too. If you're reading those kind of books, I think that's great. And the book last week that I talked about, Scientific Americans, kind of chewed it up a little bit. But very valid points here. And you should familiarize yourself with the scientific method and science in general if you're going to be in the paranormal field, whether it's cryptozoology, UFO research, or ghosts. You should understand the scientific method. And it's more than just five simple steps. It goes well beyond that. And one thing that I had wanted to say about that is you can read all you want, but a book is not really going to teach you everything you need to know about the scientific method. You have to learn how to utilize it in the field. And you're going to make mistakes, or at least you should. And that's what peer review is for. And that's one of the major stumbling blocks, especially of the ghost field. People put their evidence out there. And what you didn't see, I was doing really big air quotes with my fingers. Evidence. And when people put their evidence out there, and other people will say, well, maybe it's this or maybe it's that. It seems like people get really defensive and they get argumentative and very dismissive of other people offering potential solutions. And that's why we're viewed as pseudoscience. And that's where science breaks down. But it gets more complicated than that. But I challenge you, if you call your group a scientific group, you should really be reading about the scientific process, the scientific method, how science works, and really challenge your beliefs about these tools and technology. What they're measuring and how you're utilizing out in the field. Because I'm telling you, they're not giving you what you think you are. And one great resource that I have that I've actually created is a website called Ghost Help. It's a former ghost investigation group that I ran, Ohio Paranormal Investigation Network. And as I mentioned last week when I reviewed this book, there is a quote from my website that Sharon Hill used for her book. So I appreciate that, and I've put a lot of work into this website to help groups and help clients alike. It's kind of a dual website. There's two websites pretty much in one. One goes for the clients. Another is for researchers and investigators, and if you click on the researcher and investigator link, it kind of goes in different kind of in one step to the next. It goes from basics to science to process, the tools to resources, books, and kind of winds it down. And it goes through the science aspect. Highly recommend you reading that if you're curious about the scientific process and the basic steps, the five basic steps, and how that's very limited, and how to kind of challenge yourself and things to think about. And you can also read a little bit of an article that I wrote that was published in the Journal of Anomalous Sciences way back in 2009. Long time ago. My goodness. We didn't even have cell phones back then. Yeah, we did. Got that published in a journal, scientific journal. Granted, it was an anomalous sciences journal, but very proud of that, about the scientific method. So not all of us live in caves. Not all of us don't understand science, but it's very helpful that you read about this and learn about this and understand the process and everything that can get in your way, because it's things that we all need to clear the hurdles for in order for us to move forward as a field. So with that, I'm going to leave you hanging. Until next week, remember, next week's show, February 13th, will be at 8 p.m. Eastern. And that's 7 p.m. Central for y'all. And don't be late. Don't be that guy. Or don't be early. Something like that. I don't know. Dan, don't be early, I guess. Anyway, I'm confused. Maybe I'm sick. I don't know what's going on. As always, again, if you have any information about any conference or convention, you want me to talk about it, you want to see it on the Paranews Insider list, let me know at insider@paranewsinsider.com. I appreciate you being here. Appreciate you listening to the show. And again, big thanks to Cindy, my producer, to Dita and Paul in the chat room, Dita's work on the website, and everything that she does for the network. And I will see you next week, 24 hours from now. Or no, not 24 hours. I don't know. I don't know where I'm at today. But I will definitely see you next week, or at least you'll hear me next week. But in the meantime, like I said before, keep your eyes in the skies. You never know what you're going to see. Your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, that's right, don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.